Listening to the Caledonian Investment Management Macro Podcast, hosted by me, Andrew Thompson. Morning, Asim. How are you?
Morning, Andrew. Not too bad, thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, markets are, how should we put it, a little bit unusual with heightened levels of volatility since the second coming of the Donald. Since he arrived at the White House, you know, markets have got pretty scary again. And I know we sort of pointed to this, didn't we? When we met last time, we suggested markets were going to get volatile, but I guess we couldn't foresee, who could, the implication of tariffs and all of those interesting things. So, you know, maybe let's just start off by having a bit of a chat around what is going on in US. What is Donald trying to achieve here? Do you want to lead off on that? And I'll sort of add my thoughts as we travel.
Yeah, I mean, last time we talked about this, we were thinking about conditions in the market. And what was missing at that point was a catalyst. Since then, what we've seen is the catalyst has been Donald Trump's tweets, more like. So the problem is, what is the ultimate goal? What is he trying to achieve? And what we are seeing here is, or what we've discussed in the past as well, is probably the US wants to lead the West. And as we are moving towards more of a sort of deglobalization or decoupling, Trump has been very clear that he wants to have a clear lead in AI, tech-centric sort of lead, and advanced manufacturing, and also an orderly sort of rewriting the trade side of things with an orderly trade. So I think that's what I would say his main objectives are. Now, how he goes about and achieves them is slightly different. And again, I'm sure you have your thoughts.
Yeah, I do. It's fascinating. I think, you know, strategically, what is he trying to achieve? Well, you know, Biden and most other presidents, frankly, including Trump 1.0, have just let the debt levels just, you know, rise and rise and rise, such that we're now at, what is it, $36 trillion of debt in US, which is mind-boggling. Someone told me that's 12 zeros. It really is too difficult to fathom. And certainly servicing that debt is going to be pretty difficult, and it's consuming most of US GDP, and therefore, if you like, putting a cap on their ability to grow and do the things that they might want to do in a ever competitive world. So I think one of his major strategic objectives is to control the debt, or to control the level of increase in the debt. And you know, he's trying to do that, and in some interesting ways, of course, as only Donald can. One of which is the creation of DOGE, as it's known, the acronym, the Department of Government Efficiency, headed up by, I know you refer to him as the Vice President, Elon Musk. And clearly they're looking to make savings and cut the civil service equivalent over there. But, you know, that's not really going to make much of a dent in $36 trillion. I think, you know, in addition to that, there'll be some strategic withdrawal. And I think we've seen that in terms of military spending and military support, notably, you know, Ukraine and Europe. And, you know, Trump's style, if that's the appropriate word, his bullying tactic of saying, hey, we're going to withdraw from NATO, and all these interesting threats. Are they threats, or are they, you know, real things? Well, it certainly stimulated the Germans to raise a whole heap of debt of their own to fund a military expansion. He wants to supplement the Internal Revenue Service, their equivalent, of course, of you know, the tax system, with an external revenue service, and that's really going to be delivered by his imposition of taxes and tariffs, which, you know, is pretty draconian. In some cases, 25% on autos, as we saw just last week, and the implications for Western manufacturers is pretty significant. So that's what I think he's trying to do. I think he's looking to control the debt expansion. And you have to admire him as much as I'm sure none of us particularly warm to his style. You have to admire his ambition. It's a massive, massive ambition. And I think he's trying to make a name for himself in the history books, So.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. That's a domestic issue. Whereas geopolitically, he can kind of see that there's a already a decoupling and world is moving to two different, or it's how they'll call it, multipolar world. And in that sense, he would like to have a bit more control on the US-led West. And also it's to do with the sharing of those expenses, not just, free ride. As you rightly said, that's Europe is now seeing a bit of a rethink. I think this Doge and what he's trying to do is actually a good thing. The only problem is that you've got this sequential risk between what he's trying to do and its impact on GDP and the later on what he's thinking of doing in terms of deregulation and tax cuts. So in my mind, so deregulations, tax cuts are pro-growth and disinflationary. Whereas you've got this immigration and you've got Doge. These things are more of a thing. It's a drag on GDP, and again, are reducing some of that liquidity in the market in terms of fiscal spending and are disinflationary. Tariffs, good thing. The problem with the tariffs is that it's a consumer tax, and logic would suggest that you would have stronger dollar to take some of that impact off. But if you have a weaker dollar and tariffs on top, I think the consumer is already kind of sensing, or at least front running it, that there's going to be a bit more inflation coming through. So yeah, so he's doing all of these current processes through Doge and cutting, and especially through this reconciliation bill that's gone through on the fiscal side and also on the GDP side. But in terms of deregulation and pro-growth policies, they've not come in, and I think that's the risk in between these two that. It's the period between what is happening now and what he's planning to do in the future. And I think that's where it nicely goes into what we were discussing earlier on. US consumer spending has softened. If you look at the consumer confidence, March 2025 was at 57 points, its lowest since 2022. And inflation expectations are up. And we've seen that in Fed's SEP. They're expecting inflation to nudge up, whilst they're also expecting GDP to soften in 2025 and 2026.
Yeah, I mean, so we've seen, haven't we? US has had what, 5% nominal GDP for the last few years, which is extraordinary. The largest economy in the world growing at 5% per annum nominal. So I guess we are agreeing that nominal GDP level's likely to come back to maybe, who knows, but maybe three, let's say three-ish. So, this isn't the end of the world. This isn't, a big US sell-off and, it all goes to hell in a cart. But we are talking about a reduction in GDP growth likely in US as they attempt to cut the deficit, as they attempt to re-industrialize. If you look at the debt to GDP ratio today, it's pretty close to where it was in 1946. Just after World War II, and you think, well, crikey, how did we get there? Well, it's through crazy spending and, responses to COVID and just, profligacy and all the rest of it. So they're going to need to do something, and I guess GDP is going to need to shrink, but it shouldn't necessarily mean the end of the world at the investment level. Would you concur with that?
I do, and I think it's a good thing. They're going towards a more sustainable side through private spending and private consumption rather than spending through, because as you rightly said, GDP, 30%, 33% of that GDP, nominal GDP, was coming through the government spending side. So, and that increases your fiscal deficit, because we know that they've been funding it through deficit spending and the issuance and the debt issuance part is as you already discussed. So absolutely, I think a lower GDP, but a more sustainable GDP is a lot better than spending through debt. And I think that was what the catalyst is at the moment in the markets. It's that uncertainty that yes, you're cutting, But at the same time, where is your pro-growth policies? We've not seen anything.
Yeah.
So markets are a bit more in that uncertain period. Markets don't like uncertainty. They can deal with the bad news, they can deal with the good news, but they don't like uncertainty. And that's exactly where we are at the moment.
Yes, agreed. So we're still contemplating some reductions in US rates later this year, perhaps not too many more, but some softening in monetary policy, which is interesting against the backdrop of the potential for inflation to rise a little bit, stimulated by tariffs. So are we still thinking, are you still thinking US rates down a little bit from here?
Yes, we're thinking about two rate cuts, 50 basis points this year. But I think Fed is not in a good place at the moment. If you look at PCE numbers, if you look at the CPI numbers, and also what they are projecting is that the inflation is going to nudge up. So it's going to be a bit of a difficult one for them. And if you look at the 10-year, it's already down to 4.2-ish now. 10-year and 30-year, you kind of see that it's in a no man's land at the moment. It's not really nudging up or down at the moment. It's been quite flat for the last 3, 4 weeks now. So yeah, so I think they still are thinking about two rate cuts,
Okay.
unless something really goes wrong, and in that case, probably around 150 basis points, and you know that there's something wrong in the market then.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a slowdown, doesn't it? It's not necessarily looking like a recession at the moment, but certainly it's appearing a slowdown. Okay, so let's just grasp the nettle then and talk about some of the geopolitical issues and clearly, from an investment level, we can't model portfolios to what could happen geopolitically. But, Trump's talking about Canada being the 51st state. There's some sort of referendum in Greenland. I don't know why I smile. Later this month. And of course, the ongoing war of horrendous attrition in Ukraine, which we all so passionate to see resolved. So what do you think he's trying to achieve with Canada and Greenland? Have you got any thoughts on that or?
Yeah, I think it's just pressuring them into something. And again, it's the what's the ultimate goal? It's the US leads the West. And I think that he's just basically trying to pressure them into some sort of a deal where I don't see Canada being the 51st state, and I probably more concessions on Greenland, and you may get some more, I don't know, bases or some sort of along those lines something. But yeah, I mean, again, Greenland, not too sure, to be honest, what
No,
he's trying to achieve. And
it's
he can change
interesting.
his mind. He can change his mind in a tweet. So,
Well,
yeah.
that's right. I mean, just thinking tariffs, we've had intraday tariffs. It's so difficult
Exactly. Yeah. So,
to second guess this, but
yeah.
it certainly seems to be about trade, doesn't it? Panama Canal as well. I mean, America once owned the Panama Canal, then gave it away with conditions and now trying to get it, muscle it back again, but
Yeah.
it all seems to be about trade, and I guess the Greenland area, maybe with some climate change as the ice fields retreat a little bit, there'll be more open passages for ships, and they just want to have greater control in that area because it realistically it's so close to North America. Who knows? But it's an interesting
But these are allies, right, Andrew? These are allies,
yeah.
and
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't, it seems to be not just America first, it seems to be almost America only,
only, yeah, that's it.
which is interesting. Okay, let's move on then. Maybe let's just chat about Europe because Europe's done pretty well, hasn't it, in terms of stock market performance, notably Germany. And almost despite that economy bumping along the recessionary bottom there for a period of time. And what's going on, and do we like Europe, and do we
Yeah.
see opportunities?
So again, it links back to that earlier question of yours about Ukraine war. So Ukraine war, we had a lot of positive news coming out of Ukraine, or at least chatter out of Riyadh that there's going to be a resolution. Over the last 2 or 3 days, we've seen more of the negative chatter, especially from Zelensky, on not agreeing on those lithium deposits and those mineral rights to the US. Which is probably, again, if you're thinking from Donald Trump's point of view, it's a no deal then for him. From the Putin side of things, again, it appears that there's a bit more negative news coming in again in terms of him not agreeing on some of the concessions that the US side has asked for. So, but The good thing is they're still talking, so there is a deal to be done, and I hope that they can get to some sort of resolution soon. Now, Europe is benefiting on the back of those peace talks and the peace dividend, and if there is a peace, and if there's more requirement of what Donald Trump and the US wants, the EU share the burden and the costs of the security that they provide, then yeah, so that's where Europe is. Europe is trying to spend on the defense and also infrastructure, which they've not been spending for quite some time now. So from that point of view, the fiscal side, it's good. And they've, again, it's a pro-growth German fiscal policy, plans to rebuild European defense and the infrastructure. It's all good. The problem is, how do you fund it? And if you're funding it through debt, you'd expect bonds to come under more pressure. And I think this is where we are at the moment. We are thinking, or we believe that European bonds can see another 50 basis points increase in terms of yield, or 50, to, yeah, at least 50. So is that okay? Is that something which the markets have already sort of factored in? And I think markets, in terms of flows, if you see just the flows, there's a lot of flows coming into the EU, into the European markets, and that's quite positive. The problem is, the first move, in my understanding, the first move into Europe is almost done. Now we would like to see some sort of consolidation on the back of these negative news that is now trickling in. And once that happens, we'll understand where do we stand in terms of, is Europe a long-term pro-growth, which would then mean that the bond market would respond in kind, and then you'll have a bit more currency stability as well.
Yeah,
Because we've
it's
seen
interesting.
how much currency has gone up on the back of dollar depreciation. So yeah, so that's where we are. And I think it's likable. It's a good place to be, but not, I wouldn't say, not right now. Just wait a little bit longer for it to mature in terms of opportunity.
Yeah,
And if you look from, sorry, if you look at from the CAPE ratio point of view, fundamentals, Europe is around 21.58 times. Compared to US, that's 36.4.
wow.
So it's relative bet, but it all depends on fiscal expansion, and the ECB is on the easing side, whereas Fed is on the standby. So it's two different, I think, angles to look at it.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. Europe's done terrifically well. Those sort of larger cap European, notably German stocks like Rheinmetall, the industrial names, done fantastically well on in terms of building tanks in what used to be Volkswagen factories makes the mind boggle. But yes, it's done particularly well. But we also remember the convergence discussions and strategies led by the European Commission, which said debt had to be contained at certain levels. And German financiers have been particularly strict and rigid and disciplined in that, as we all know. So it's interesting, and to your point on bond yields, notably German bond yields, that the European Commission is now allowing the individual state nations to increase their borrowing beyond what used to be allowed. So yeah, we need to keep a close eye on that. But nevertheless, we have enjoyed European equity expansion, and we've enjoyed the benefits of that inside portfolios, haven't we? It's been
Absolutely.
pretty good. But let's just quickly turn then to UK, which we haven't been particularly keen on for all sorts of reasons around economic stewardship by the new UK administration. But UK has got some interesting and defensive qualities when markets turn a little bit wobbly, notably extremely large cap names with strong dividend flows, which helps to provide an underpin. What are we thinking about that? Is that part of our mindset as the rest of the world is looking, notably led by US, a little less stable?
So again, coming back to tariffs affecting EU, tariffs affecting Canada, tariffs affecting China, well, it will start affecting them, tariffs affecting Japan, tariffs so far not affecting the UK.
Yeah, okay.
And the fund flows have been quite positive in the UK over the last few months. You're absolutely right. The annual growth projections are somewhere around 0.3% annualized. Inflation is at around 2.8 and projected to be increased to around 4-ish. And then, but you've also got some good side of things. So if you've got ex UK revenue coming into those FTSE 100 names, you've got positive wage growth and real wage growth. You've got dividend yields that's better than US and Europe. And then you've got a very interesting sector mix. So you've got financials and you've also got energy in there. Quite defensive. And I think in the last 4 weeks, we have seen that character of the UK market. So in that sense, and especially if you look at the flows data, it looks quite attractive. And we've been in the UK and we're probably more interested in the UK than Europe at this point. And if you look at the fundamental valuations, UK is at 17 times in CAPE ratio. So it's almost actually more than half of the US. So,
It's cheap by comparison, isn't it? No
yeah.
question.
So if you take all of that into account, and BOE is not in a rush to sort of increase rates, 4.5 at the moment. And I personally think it's probably going to be a bit more on the easing side, and it has been. So we'll see a bit more as the Fed cuts. And the currency has been quite, now that's the currency is probably a different story. It's more of a dollar weakness than pound strength. But nonetheless, we've benefited from it. And again, coming back to flows, they've been quite strong. So I think it's the income story, it's the dividend yield, and it's the flows.
Okay, interesting. Okay, let's maybe pop down to China then, China and Japan, and let's go to China maybe first. I mean, it's been a stop go. Is it recovering? Is it going into recession? Is there going to be some sort of economic bazooka to stimulate things? And it's all been a little bit confusing, but the backdrop has been a property-led economy, which got itself into significant debt difficulties, and continuing to manufacture for the rest of the world, it seems, and export successfully. We've seen Chinese tech doing quite well and maybe getting ahead of itself, getting ahead of regulation, and then being told off, I suppose, by President Xi, and being controlled and saying, you guys can only really prosper at the will of the state. But since then, with tech being under control now, arguably, they seem to be being focused in terms of AI, in terms of green technology, solar, wind, battery electric vehicles, and they seem to be doing pretty well. What are you thinking about China?
The interesting thing is that China usually doesn't do business like the US. They wouldn't call the head of the tech companies in to meet the president and all that. That's changed in the last, I would say, few months, where President Yi's met with Jack Ma, who was out of favor for some years. And all of a sudden, you see a lot of flows going into tech names and a lot of more. I mean, we understand that Chinese, there's a lot of new tech patents coming out, but at the same time, there's a lot more capital that's flowing in now. So that would suggest or signal a policy shift. We've also seen property sales are showing signs of recovery. So property was one of the major sectors, or probably the only sector that got really hit back in the Common Prosperity Drive. So I think that there's signs of recovery and there's signs of policy change. China is still at about 10% discount to the EM benchmark. If you compare that to India, India is at a 70% premium to the same benchmark.
Wow.
And again, if you think about who's getting hit in terms of tariffs, China already went through this in Trump 1.0. And in my opinion, they've been preparing for this or some sort of trade deal. And one of the ways to navigate it is to devalue their currency. And we've seen plenty of that happening in the past few years, whereas India is not prepared for that sort of thing. And that's probably why you've seen a kind of a bear market already and underway in India. In terms of China, I think it's very well positioned at this point. We would like it to see some sort of consolidation. The tech names, you rightly said that the tech names have been doing very well. The problem with this is that, as you know, I don't like parabolic moves. And we saw the first parabolic move, and then it came back, and it was a good point to buy. We wanted to see some policy change, and we can now see those policy changes taking effect. So I think it's a good place to be. We would like to see some more consolidation before we add. I mean, we've already got EM exposure, and in that EM exposure, we've got India, Mexico, etc. as well. So
Okay.
would we like to add China separately? That's something to be discussed.
Okay. All right. So let's nip to Japan then. Let's just think about, what's happened there. And I have to congratulate you. Your call on Japanese equities mid last year was absolutely bang on. And the market's off what, 16% or more, isn't it, from its high point. And maybe with more to go. And so, what are we thinking about Japan now? Are we starting to see some value, or do we still think it's heading south?
So the point about parabolic moves, Japan was a parabolic move. It went up and then it's just lost momentum. I think it's the way we look at it is you've got a policy trilemma in Japan, the BOJ, and then you also got these issues with the JGBs at this point, right? So Japanese government bonds. If the inflation remains as is at the moment and the CPI projections for the next year are around 2.6%, if they do target the inflation side, they lose the bond market side of things, which is basically bond market, bond yields will pick up. And I think that's the most natural way to do things. But we know that you've got a yield curve control in Japan. And if they don't address that part, they've got a currency issue. And if they want to manage currency, they have to spend. Yeah, I think Japan is not in a good position at the moment. There are some really good corporate stories, maybe. And that's for the active managers. But generally, I don't think Japan is in a good place. And if we add to it the GDP to debt ratio that you talked about earlier on, sorry, debt to GDP ratio, it's got around 264%
Yes,
debt to GDP ratio.
yeah,
So how do you
that's
service that without additional debt? So I think it's not in a good place at this point. And I think in Japanese equities, yes, okay, fine. It's a good in terms of they've come out of deflationary phase. That's very good. But I think in Japanese equities, we're probably going to see a bit more correction where bond yields probably move up and you see Nikkei probably around another 15, 16%. And then we may get interested. But till then, I think we'll just leave it as a neutral position.
Yeah, well, we did very well out of it, and I'm sure investors are, pleased with what we did, and we exited exactly the right time. It's incredibly tough to get timing right, and well done for doing that. Okay, so here we stand at the end of the first quarter 2025, an interesting new world it seems. And does that equate to some new portfolio positions? And given everything we've just chatted through, what are we doing in portfolios? Are we realigning to keep risks where they need to be?
Right. So in terms of 2025, I think we discussed this in the previous podcast that this is probably going to be the year where you have to protect your gains.
Yeah.
There's a lot of policy volatility that's come through and things can change in one tweet and markets are reacting to it. So how do we navigate it? Now, for what we are looking at is a possible reduction in our exposure to the US, a possible increase in our exposure to the UK, and maybe a little bit towards commodity side. And I think till we get a policy clarity which is affecting all of these regions, all the developed markets and China, we should have a little bit more in cash. And once we have got that policy clarity and a direction of the market, we can then go back in, because again, these are long-only portfolios, so we have to be very careful. We can't short any markets. So it has to be not timing, I would say, but it has to be very cleverly done this year, especially with these policy changes or policy volatility, I would say.
Yeah,
So
okay,
that's
all
where we
right.
are.
Yeah, thanks, Asim. Look, I think it was a good chat, and it's good to know that we're realigning portfolios given new market risks and Donald Trump and tariffs and what that's bringing to the world stock markets, and keeping consumers, investors in line with their attitude to risk and their suitability is super important. So yeah, that was a good chat. Appreciate it. And let's get together again before too long and repeat the process. Thanks a lot.
Perfect. Thanks, Andrew.
This content is distributed by Alpha Beta Partners, a trading name of AB Investment Solutions, which is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This content is targeted at professional investors only.